Commissioners Dusty Johnson and Steve Kolbeck. My name is Gary Hansen. On the agenda today, well, before we jump to the agenda, I'll check and see who's on the phone with us. Tal Wieczorek.
I'm here, Mr. Chairman.
Mary Sisak.
Present.
Denny Duncan.
Present.
Good morning to all of you, and is there anyone else on the line with us this morning? If not, on the agenda this morning, we have, we only have four items. It should go very quickly, he says facetiously. The last item, number four, we're actually going to take first. Then we will do number three, and then we'll do one and two together. So we're going to go backwards on our list today. It seems to make the best sense, at least from the standpoint of having the least amount of people involved in having to sit through the entire meeting. Additionally, we haven't really given TCO 007 the same opportunity to go through their process as number one and two on today's meeting have. So we will begin today's meeting on item number four in the matter of the petitions for suspension or modification of 47 U.S.C. Section 251, Subsection B, Subsection 2 of the Communications Act of 1934, as amended in dockets TC08-006 through TC08-027, inclusive. And Ms. Rogers.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Chairman Hansen and members of the Commission, thank you for your time this morning. I filed a motion to extend the temporary suspension in all of the LMP dockets, and I would like to maybe just take a moment of your time to explain why we filed this motion to extend the temporary suspension. Just by way of background, you will recall that petitioners initially asked this commission for a suspension of the requirement to implement LMP back in 2004. And many of the LECs at that time had not upgraded their switches. The transporting and routing issues were unresolved. Cost was a very key factor, and also there was no demand for LMP. So this commission found that the petitioners had met the factual requirements of Sections 251F2 and granted the suspension petitions. This commission also, in those proceedings, granted petitioners an interim suspension pending final resolution or decisions in the dockets. Then in 2005, the commission granted the LECs a suspension of intermodal LMP until 6 months after the public release of the FCC's regulatory flexibility analysis, but you also afforded the LECs the opportunity to file for a further suspension within 3 months of public release of that order. And that's what the LECs have done, and those are the dockets that are pending before you today. I think it's important to understand exactly what the petitioners are asking for in these petitions. They're asking for a modification of the requirement to implement intermodal LMP such that petitioners are not required to pay for transport of ported numbers or calls beyond their local calling areas. They requested a suspension of the requirement to implement LMP until the transport issues have been resolved, and to afford the parties the opportunity to engage in negotiations to try to reach a resolution of these outstanding transport and routing issues. Finally, the petitioners asked for a temporary suspension until 90 days after a commission decision on the petitions. Thereafter, I would say not without some controversy, the parties did enter into a stipulation for a procedural schedule. And in that schedule, among other things, in that stipulation, the parties agreed that the commission decision date would be extended to November 8th of 2008. The parties also agreed that they would engage in good faith negotiations to try to resolve the outstanding transport and routing issues, and that the temporary suspension would be extended to August 8th, with the provision that we could request a further extension of the temporary suspension to November 8th. The motion filed by the petitioners follows that stipulation. I would represent to you today that the parties have engaged in diligent negotiations. We've had ongoing calls. We've exchanged proposals and counter-proposals and counter-counter-proposals, but we have not quite reached an agreement. The petitioner's expectations, I will tell you, that were that we would have these dockets settled and an agreement would have been reached long before this time. Unfortunately, everything has taken longer, and so we have not quite reached an agreement, although I will tell you that the parties are still discussing potential solutions. So the reason that we filed the petition today is we have not reached an agreement, even though we have been negotiating this whole time. We need more time to continue those negotiations, and I will tell you that the LECs are committed to do that, to continue in the negotiation process. But there is the possibility that if an agreement cannot be reached, this commission will have to resolve the outstanding transport and routing issues, including the obligations of the parties for those obligations. By forcing the LECs to implement before our petitions are heard and you have issued a decision on the merits of the petition would be, in essence, denying our petitions without affording us a reasonable time to present our cases and have our day in court. And we don't believe that that is an equitable action, and it is also contrary to the precedent set by this commission in prior similar dockets, including the 2004 LNP dockets. I would like to make one further observation with regard to the motion. I did not, frankly, believe that this would be a controversial motion. In our ongoing discussions with the wireless carriers, they never indicated an expectation of immediate implementation, which is, it looks like anyway, that's the position that they're taking in the response to this motion. The earliest implementation date any of our discussions or proposals even discussed as to any LECs, and this was the correspondence coming from the wireless carriers, was October 8th. We've had continuing discussions, and the wireless carriers, in fact, have acknowledged that some of the LECs have not upgraded their systems yet. And even though it's in their plans to do so, the wireless carriers have indicated repeatedly that they understand that and they don't have a problem with that. So, but prior to this response, no one has ever discussed parallel or immediate implementation for any of the LECs. I would also note that as a practical matter, immediate implementation is not possible. Now, some of the LECs may be able to implement more quickly than others, but more quickly is sort of a relative term. That means possibly less than 90 or 100 days, that is 30 to 60 days. I thought I was echoing here. That's why I pushed it back. But not 2 days down the road. There, just for example, and I'm not a technical expert on this, but just to change the NPA and XXs in the LERD is a 66-day process. Then testing needs to take place after that. If all of the LECs or several of them are engaged in those actions at the same time, that's going to extend the time frame. So there is a reason why we ask for the time after a decision is made or after a resolution or an agreement is reached. And in our last discussions that took place at the end of last week, I thought that we had basically agreed to, or at least I didn't hear any dispute to our discussions, that when we set the implementation date, it would have to be so many days from the date we sign a settlement stipulation. And I didn't hear any disagreement of that on the side of the wireless carriers. So that's why this particular response came as a little bit of a surprise, because I did not perceive this to be a controversial motion. So having said that, I would just like to maybe address a couple of the points that were raised by the wireless carriers. It appears that the interveners argue that there is no factual basis that justifies the relief requested. And their second argument appears that to be that for petitioners that, and I'm putting this in quotes, have implemented LMP, and that's the end of the quote, and have existing direct connects, that there are no outstanding issues. And I will address that in a moment. But first of all, the petitioners disagree with the wireless carrier's statement of the standard or burden required by the petitioners to be granted a temporary suspension. The wireless carriers state that in order to further suspend petitioners' LMP obligations, the commission must have a factual basis for doing so under 47 U.S.C. 251 F2. And then the wireless carriers actually quote the first part of that section. Petitioners agree that on the merits of the petition, that is their burden. They have to meet the factual requirements under 251 F2 in order to be granted a suspension or the relief requested. But 251 F2 goes on to set forth the time frame for a decision by this commission. And in that language, it states that the commission may suspend the requirement to which the petition applies pending such action. So that is in your discretion, and I don't believe that the statute says you have to meet all those burdens in order to receive a temporary suspension. And we believe that there is a reason for that, as previously stated. To force the petitioners to implement before our suspension petition is even heard and decided is, in essence, a denial of what we're asking for without ever giving us the opportunity to present our case in chief. So the wireless carriers are, we believe, incorrect when they state in their response that the commission can grant a request for a temporary suspension only if the standards of Section 251 F2 are met. Those standards, we believe, apply to the merits of the petitions, not to a temporary suspension. But for the sake of argument, let's just assume for a minute that Western or the wireless carrier's interpretation of these requirements for a temporary suspension is correct. And again, we do not concede that, but just for purposes of argument, let's assume that for a moment. What the wireless carriers argue is that petitioners' request should be denied because they have failed to make any factual showing whatsoever that could support their requested relief. And we would submit that that is incorrect. The petitioners filed petitions that alleged facts supporting the relief requested in the petitions. The relief requested was not only that they not be required to implement by May 8th, that they not be required to pay for transport of ported calls beyond their local calling areas. They requested a suspension to allow negotiations with wireless carriers, and we're negotiating on the method and the best way to try to transport ported calls. But in those petitions, the petitioners also asked for an immediate temporary suspension pending this commission's consideration of their request, and they ask for a suspension until 90 days following the commission's final decision. Again, that time frame that we need to actually implement if ordered to do so. The petition stated, immediate temporary suspension is necessary so that petitioners do not have to incur LMP implementation costs until after the commission acts upon this petition. Therefore, in the petitions, in the costs exhibits that were filed in support of those petitions, in the direct pre-filed testimony, and in the exhibits to the pre-filed testimony, petitioners submitted the factual basis necessary to support the relief granted in the petitions, including a temporary suspension. I can give you some examples of the facts presented by the petitioners. The petitioners in all of these documents presented facts with regard to the cost of transport. That's found in the petitions, in the exhibits. All of these support these requests. They presented facts concerning the lack of demand. They presented facts concerning the reasons LMP would be unduly economically burdensome. They presented factual justification from the perspective of public interest and the significant level of uncertainty concerning transport of ported calls. In the pre-filed testimony, the general managers testified that petitioners would have to take a number of actions and incur various costs to be able to port numbers. The pre-filed testimony of the consultants, in addition to the transport costs, also included exhibits that set out the other costs and expenses that the petitioners would have to incur to implement LNP, such as switching software upgrades, monthly recurring LNP database dip fees, service order administration fees, and other operational costs. That's found, all of those factual allegations are found in the petition, in the pre-filed testimony, and in the exhibits attached thereto. So for the wireless carriers to state that there's a lack of factual showing is simply not the case. The second point that the wireless carriers appear to argue is that if there is a direct connect, there are no outstanding issues. And that argument fails for two reasons. I'm not aware of any LEC that has direct connects with all wireless carriers in each of its...
Forgive me for interrupting you. I'm wondering if, and my own counsel can correct me if I'm wrong here, but the question before the commission is, shall the commission grant the request for further temporary suspension? Are we arguing the case here, or are we arguing the merits of the case, or are we arguing the question of for suspension here?
I'm attempting to argue that the motion should be granted.
Okay. And it just sounds as if you're arguing
the points that I was trying to make, Commissioner, is in response to the argument or the allegation made in the response of the wireless carriers that there were no factual allegations made to support the request for a temporary suspension. I was trying to counter that argument to show that that's not the case, and in fact, there are factual allegations contained in the petitions, in the exhibits, in the pre-filed testimony.
All right. Well, forgive me for interrupting you.
That's fine. Did I answer your question?
You did, and I think you're answering the other question as well. So,
thank you. And what I was trying to do now is to respond to the second point raised in the response of the wireless carriers, and that is with regard to the direct connects and the argument that if there's a direct connect, there are no outstanding issues. And my response to that is that argument fails for two reasons. Number one, no LECs that I'm aware of have direct connects with every wireless carrier in each of its local calling areas, and that's part of the transport issue that we are still attempting to resolve, or that you will ultimately resolve. And I think the petitioners have clearly articulated this again in the petition and in the other documents that have been filed. Secondly, the wireless carriers state that some LECs, and I'll quote this from that, some LECs or some petitioners have implemented LMP. And, you know, I'm not trying to play with words here, and maybe it's a matter of semantics, but what I see that we stated in our petitions and the motion or the response of the wireless carriers say that this information, and they put together a table with regard to these particular LECs that they say have implemented LMP, and they say the information from this table was taken from the petitions filed in these cases. Well, I went back and looked at our petitions, and again, I'm not trying to play with words, but what we alleged in our petition is that for these companies that are listed here, the switches, their switches, like for example for Golden West, are LMP capable. But then we specifically said Golden West has not implemented LMP. So there's a difference in having your switches upgraded and actual implementation of LMP. Then we went on in our other documents that have gone back and forth in this docket, And just as an example, in the interrogatories that we responded to the wireless carriers, our consultants made a list of all of the actions that are still necessary in order for the petitioners to implement LNP. And it's, you know, there are actions that need to be taken, and I alluded to some of those earlier. There are still some software upgrades. There's the SOA arrangements. They have to contact switch vendors or a consultant for switch translations, and there's a whole list of things. The managers testified that they would have to take additional action and incur additional expenses in order to be able to port numbers. So when you say that petitioners or this particular petitioner has implemented LNP, I don't believe that that's the case, and I don't believe that that's what we ever represented on our petitions. When I read the petitions, what we said is some of our switches are LNP capable, but we have not implemented LNP, and all of these other actions need to take place. And the reason I raise that point is because all of those other actions do take time. And as I said before, even changing the switch and the LERD does take time. Now, I note that in one of the footnotes, they state that Venture's petition with regard to Sisseton was vague as to where it had implemented LNP. The LERD, however, indicates that Sisseton is LNP capable. I didn't have time to check the LERG, and I'm not necessarily disputing that. I did, however, talk to the assistant manager at Venture Communication, and he reiterated to me that Sisseton has not implemented LNP, and all of these other actions that would need to be taken for all of their other switches would also need to be taken in Sisseton. So, to that end, I guess we would return to the merits of the motion and why we brought this forward. The LECs need a further temporary suspension. We have, as I said, engaged in protracted negotiations. I really thought as close as recently as 2 days ago, I thought we were very close. But apparently we're not there yet. And so we're asking for additional time. We're asking you to extend the temporary suspension to November 8th, and we're asking for that for all of the reasons that I've stated above. We need to continue our negotiations. We need to avoid the incurrence of additional costs of implementation pending resolution of the outstanding issues. That's the purpose of our request. We believe it's amply supported by the filings in this docket, and we would ask you to grant our motion. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Rogers, and thank you for putting up with that echo that you were having. I know that it's a bit of a challenge to speak when you hear your words being spoken back to you as you're doing it, so thank you for that. Mr. Wieczorek or Mr. Duncan, do you have something to add to this?
Talbot Wieczorek is going to put forth the arguments both on the behalf of his client and Verizon Wireless.
Thank you, Mr. Duncan. Mr. Wieczorek.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this first part, and that is whether the Commission feels it has support in the record to give a continue the suspension for the majority of these carriers. I'll leave that up to the Commission and not belabor all those issues again. I would like to address specifically some of the things that were raised in response by Ms. Rogers concerning various petitioners. On page 6 of our filing, we laid out areas that we don't believe any further suspension should be granted. And the reason we did that is based just on what Ms. Rogers said. The primary issue here, almost the exclusive issue, is who pays the transport. Well, on page 6, we've provided a list of wire centers where the switch is LNP capable and where there are direct connects. We are not asking in that portion of our response that the Commission would deny a suspension to those or continuing the suspension for all wireless carriers. But we think at a minimum, based even on what Ms. Rogers said today, the commission should state that where a carrier has a wire center that's LNP capable and has a direct connect with a wireless carrier, no further suspension is warranted. And why is that? Because the transport issue is answered and the switch is already LNP capable. Now, at even on everything Ms. Rogers said today, the only thing that her argument sets forth as preventing these carriers from providing LNP through these direct connects to wireless carriers who are direct connected is an argument that it takes time to get the switch up to speed. And she said that is 90 days. So even on what she argued today, for those wire centers that have direct connects with a wireless carrier, there should be no additional suspension. At even under her best case argument for those wire centers would be 90 days to become LNP capable. Now, the frustration here, and I'm not going to get into all the settlement discussions because I don't think that's appropriate for these situations. But there's a frustration here by the wireless carriers that we have these carriers, we have these wire centers, we have these switches that have LNP capability, and yet these RLECs don't do a thing to start moving down that LNP path. They're not working through some of these mechanisms of contacting experts and things like that, knowing that based on their request for a suspension under F2, that these carriers, under their own request, these carriers and these wire centers don't merit a suspension based on what they've even pled. So that's the frustration the wireless carriers are falling into. So thus, at a minimum, I don't think this commission should order an additional suspension for those listed wire centers for wireless carriers who have a direct connect, eliminate the transport issue. At the most, based on what Ms. Rogers said today, the most the commission should do is say, okay, these wire centers for wireless carriers directly and connected need to start providing LNP within 90 days. And I'd take any questions if you have any. Otherwise, I'd rest on that.
Thank you. Ms. Sisak, did you have something to add?
Well, actually, I do have one response to Mr. Wieczorek's point that he just made. If you look at our petitions or the petitions filed by the ILECs, what they make clear is that even if ILEC has a direct connect with one wireless carrier, to be able to accurately transport traffic in the LNP context, you have to have the transport situation resolved with all wireless carriers. And that's because the wireless carriers port numbers between themselves. So, for example, even if an ILEC has a direct connect with Altel, if they don't have a direct connect also with Verizon, and Sprint, and RCC, or whoever else might be operating in their area, and a wireless customer ports their number from Altel to Verizon, the ILEC cannot transport that call or calls to that number appropriately. So I just wanted to clarify that or address Mr. Wieczorek's point and clarify that it is, in fact, argued in the ILEC petitions why it's not sufficient to or cannot implement LNP to one wireless carrier just because there might be a direct connect with that one wireless carrier.
Thank you. And Mr. Coit has taken the table here.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, Richard Coit, representing the South Dakota Telecommunications Association. And I would first like to just indicate, obviously, as an entity that represents all the petitioners in this case, as an association, we support the claim of the request here for a further temporary suspension pending completion of the ongoing proceedings for a couple of reasons. I think that first, obviously, there are some due process issues. I mean, the commission has the ability under the federal act to grant a suspension pending its completion of the proceedings, and we think that that's really only appropriate and right given due process protections that I guess we believe we have. In addition, I think I'm correct in noting that in agreeing to a decision by this commission past the initial 180-day period, it's my understanding that, you know, the parties have already signed a stipulation basically extending that commission time frame for a decision. And I think that when they did that, they should have probably assumed that, you know, the implementation itself would have been continued and suspended throughout that additional timeline. It seems to me that there's a little bit of procedural gamesmanship going on, and it would seem only right, given due process protections and so forth, and given the stipulations that have already been signed, giving this commission some additional time to complete its process, that they would also be okay with some further temporary suspension to allow for the completion of that process. I also would note that I think Ms. Sisak makes a very good point with respect to this claim that we could somehow partially implement LMP. There is porting between the wireless carriers, so what does happen if a wireline number is ported to one of the carriers, a wireline number is ported to one of the wireless carriers, and then they turn around a week later or 2 weeks later, and that customer wants to switch to another wireless company and wants that number then moved to that other wireless company. We may not be in a situation where we have a direct connect with that other wireless company, so then how is that routed? So I think there are issues with partial implementation. And the other issue with partial implementation, in my view, is if you order partial implementation, aren't you giving some sort of a competitive advantage to those wireless carriers that do have direct connects? Because they would be in a position to accept ported numbers, where another wireless carrier that does not have a direct connect would not be in a position at that point to accept ported numbers. And I think there are some wireless competitive issues there, and I would think that the commission would feel that those are somewhat important. It seems to me, just from the standpoint also of looking at the burdens of implementation, to expect the wireline companies to partially implement for the benefit of some carriers and have to go through the process of, you know, doing that and not doing it all at once. I mean, there's some additional burdens there. It just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me. So those would be my comments, and I appreciate your time today. It's kind of warm in here.
Thank you, Mr. Kreit. Mr. Wysorek, didn't mean to surround you there. I didn't recognize that there'd be as many petitioners speaking, and so I would like to give you an opportunity to reply to the last two.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The first of all, on this double porting argument, that would assume that somebody takes a landline and ports to one carrier and turns around and ports to another almost immediately for that to ever become an issue. Second, as to this argument that the wireless carriers have somehow waived their right to make an argument against the additional temporary suspension by signing a stipulation, I don't believe that at all. Obviously, the flip side is if the RLEX believed they needed an additional temporary, why didn't they make that a condition of the stipulation? This direct connect has been an issue since day one that's been raised by the wireless carriers. It's one of the reasons there wasn't an agreement to provide for an additional temporary suspension, because the wireless carriers do not see an issue with providing LNP to the direct connects. I appreciate the fact that Mr. Coit's concerned about the wireless carriers' competitive nature, but the two wireless carriers that have intervened in this proceeding are proposing this, The two wireless carriers are the dominant wireless carriers in the state, and the fact that one wireless carrier makes a determination to do a direct connect versus one to make an indirect connect, that's the wireless carrier's choice. And what we're asking the commission to do is say, look, if you have a direct connect with a wireless carrier, there's no transport question. You should have your switch become LNT capable. At a minimum, give them the 90 days, or at a maximum, give them the 90 days that Ms. Rogers has requested. But these carriers, for these wire centers, should become LNP compatible, and they should allow porting. That's all I would have.
Thank you. Ms. Weiss, did you have anything?
This is Rolene Weiss for Commission staff. I'd agree it really doesn't make much sense to require the petitioners to implement LNP at this time. I mean, our hearing is in less than a month, I believe, and I believe the commission can look at the evidence then and decide, you know, the merits of the case. I did have more sympathy with respect to the direct connect argument. It seemed to take care, you know, not implicate all those transport issues in my mind. And though I understand that the LECs couldn't actually implement any of that by August 8th, I was just wondering if the commission wanted to explore whether it was possible for them to, you know, look into beginning the implementation of that for the direct connects. But then again, with Ms. Sisak's and Mr. Coit's arguments on the possible issues that could arise, in this case, it may not be worth it because we're talking about 3 months. 3 months.
Is there anyone further who wishes to come before the commission on this item? If not, I have one question, and I was wrestling with somewhat what you said, Ms. Weist, during the process, too. If it does boil down to who pays the transport and the does it simply boil down to who is LNP capable and where is there a direct connect? Are there, like you say, are there issues that we may have?
I mean, I thought it was a fairly straightforward issue and something that you know could actually begin toward implementation. But again, you know, with this double porting argument, is it possible? I guess that something could arise that could prevent a problem. I guess there's a possibility that out there that it could present a problem, but I don't know how likely that is.
Okay, I'm wrestling with that portion of it myself. Commissioners, any action or discussion, questions?
I guess that on the double porting thing, I would imagine if someone wanted to port a number from one cellular company to another cellular company, you'd have to have a direct connect with both of them. Is that correct, Mr. Wazorek?
My understanding of the ILEX argument is that if you port to Altel, and then the person who ported to Altel then decides, oh, now I want to port to Verizon, at that time, they think there's a rating routing question because they'd have to transport to, let's say it's a Martin number where Altel has a direct connect that they'd have to then transport to Verizon. And there's a question of who should pay the transport in those situations. I guess my position on that is, number one, it's incredibly highly unlikely that's going to occur before the transport issue is decided by this commission sometime this fall. And because somebody would have to actually go to their wireline, find out the service is available, go to their wireline company, port it to Altel, and then make a decision somewhere down the line to port it to Verizon within a month. And I think this is even further highly unlikable from the standpoint of if commission said, which I think given the arguments submitted by Ms. Rogers, that, okay, for these wire centers, you got to start becoming LNP capable. Your 90 days starts to run today. Because then what you do is you push this out to, you know, the end of the last quarter before this can occur. And by that time, you're likely going to have a final decision on the transport before you ever get a port. But then what we don't run into for these direct connects, because we don't run into an issue where we get to the end of the game and then they say, no, we know the transport was never going to be an issue with these guys, but now we want the 90 days from the final order before we have to do anything. I think the wireline carriers need to start moving down that line, because there is really no issue in these wire centers for the direct connect carriers.
Thank you.
No further questions. Is there action by the commission on this item?
Mr. Chairman, I understand the arguments on all sides. I don't see much of a benefit of starting the clock today for some of the companies, but not others. Given the limited benefit and the likelihood of some efficiencies and having everybody on the same track, at this point, my motion would be to approve the temporary suspensions for all the companies.
Discussion? From my standpoint, I don't know, with all due respect, Commissioner Johnson, I don't necessarily buy the entirety of the argument of not, of going ahead altogether. If some are ready, then so be it. On the other hand, if our staff is even somewhat uncomfortable and looks at this from a standpoint that there may be some other items that we need to explore, I would hate to say that some should start now and then find out later that no, we shouldn't have done that. And since we're really on the threshold of examining it in its entirety, I would agree with the motion and give you some credit for making the right decision.
May I ask a clarifying question?
Sure.
Would it be, is your motion to approve the request for temporary suspension in accordance with the terms of the request? That would be a suspension until November 8th. Okay, thank you.
And Commissioner Johnson signified yes, that's his intention. Commissioner Colbeck, anything? Then the vote is Commissioner Johnson.
Aye.
Commissioner Colbeck?
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen votes yes, the motion carries. We will turn our attention then to item number 3 on the agenda. Item number 3 is in the matter of the petition of Brookings Municipal Utilities doing business as Swifttel Communications for suspension or modification of dialing parity, number portability, and reciprocal compensation obligations. In the matter of TC07-007, the question is, shall the commission grant the motions to compel? And I am wondering if it's where we ended last time, if that is where we should begin this time, with Swifttel's motion to compel filed against Sprint. That would be in 3, 8, and 10. Swifttel?
Yes, thank you. I believe questions 3, 8, and 10 are very similar to questions that the parties argued about in connection with the Alltel motion, and so Swifttel will not pursue those questions at this time.
Thank you.
On the next question is interrogatory 4, and I received a communication from Sprint's counsel yesterday, and my understanding of that communication is that they believe that the question is identical to one also argued on the Alltel motion, and for that reason, it appears to me that they're arguing they shouldn't have to respond, but I think they're incorrect. Question 4 asked Sprint to identify its switches, its interoffice transport routes, intercompany transmission facilities, points of interconnection, a couple other things. And my recollection of the argument before the commission on that point in the Alltel motion was that Alltel was ultimately ordered to respond to and provide information on a couple of these points. where I'm going with this is simply to say that if what Sprint is really proposing is that they would comply with whatever the commission ordered in the Altel proceeding, Swiftel would agree with that as well, and we won't need to re-argue this question.
Ms. Weiss, is that your understanding?
I guess I would first ask Sprint if they agreed with, because it's, Ms. Sisak is correct. We did order some information with respect to interrogatory four. So, again, the question to Sprint is, are they going to provide that same information here?
Yeah, this is Talbot Wysorek for Sprint. I believe the information that you ordered Altel to provide, I had already provided as a supplemental response to interrogatory four by Sprint, and that is the POP is in Sioux Falls. It's connected to the SDN switch and the Quest switch. And then we also clarified in response to, in our supplemental responses in response to another interrogatory that, that Sprint is not asking Swiftel to carry traffic beyond its POP in Sioux Falls.
Thank you.
That's correct, except I believe if I have this, I listened to it online yesterday, but with respect to interrogatory 4, similar to the Altel interrogatory 4, I believe the commission decided that it was going to limit the response to the Sioux Falls switch and interoffice transport routes, intercompany transmission facilities, and points of interconnection with other carriers that are directly connected to that point. So that is my question, if Sprint will accept that same ruling, or if Swiftel and Sprint will just accept that same ruling here.
And Swiftel will accept that same ruling here.
Yeah, and I'm not going to re-argue that, and I would accept that ruling. I'm going to have to probably listen to it and try to make sure I've got everything covered then.
Okay.
On interlock, I'm sorry, are we ready to go forward?
Yes, I just need a clarification. Oh. When we were speaking on the first issue, interrogatory 3, and were you referring to 3, 8, and 10 when you said you wouldn't be arguing those?
Correct.
Okay, thank you. Please continue.
Yes, interrogatories 5, 55, 56, and 57 ask questions all related to the transport and transmission routes between Sprint and Mediacom, the equipment and facilities that Sprint is going to use in connection with its service with Mediacom, and then 56 is also asking about equipment and facilities, but in a slightly different way. And then 57 asks that the locations of the equipment and facilities be identified. One of the central issues in this proceeding is the cost of transporting traffic to various points. And one of the other things that has been argued by Sprint and by Altel is that the way Swiftel has modeled the cost of transport is not appropriate, and that their transport, the way they've modeled it, is inefficient, and that there are alternative, more efficient methods that exist. What we know is that there is an arrangement for the use of facilities between Sprint and Mediacom. Those facilities are going to be used to provide service in the Brookings Rate Center, and we believe all of those facilities are located someplace between the city of Brookings and Sioux Falls. And, you know, Sprint has proposed an alternative to talk about Sioux Falls, but we believe that there may actually be alternatives even better than that. And so what we seek to do here is really have an understanding of their existing facilities and their network, which they are already going to use to provide service in Swiftel service area. And it will allow Swiftel then to, number one, evaluate whether the alternative transport and routing methods that they are proposing are in fact efficient, or whether there may be something more efficient. And this does become important because the commission's choice, or the, you know, the commission's ability in this proceeding, is not simply to select Swift-Pell's preferred course of action or Sprint's preferred course of action, but after looking at the evidence, it might become clear that there is another course of action that is better than either of the alternatives being provided. And so we believe that, that this information, which Sprint should have readily available, will provide admissible evidence on that point. And I would also just point out that under the South Dakota Rules of Evidence, we are not, Swift-Pell is not limited to seeking information that has to do with the points that it has raised and made, but it also is entitled to seek information relating to any claim or defense of any party to this proceeding. And that is why we believe that the information being sought in 5, 55, 56, and 57 is necessary for this case, and our motion should be granted.
Mr. Ozark?
Well, I mean, if you read these interrogatories, I don't believe there's any bearing on this case or that's going to lead to anything that's readily admissible. First of all, these aren't limited just to Swift-Pell's territory. They're for the entire state. Second, you're facing a situation where these look like arbitration questions. You know, if here's how if Sprint's taking the position, look, we're not going to have you carry any further than the Sioux Falls. That sets the outer reaches of Swift-Pell's claim for transport obligation as to Sprint. Essentially, the fact that Mediacom carries traffic to Sioux Falls to hand it off to Sprint, I don't see what kind of bearing that has on this case. The plan as laid out by Swift-Pell, and the reason we say it's inefficient, is it talks about using direct connects with every carrier as opposed to bundling traffic. You know, the fact that we have this relationship with MCC where MCC brings the traffic to Sprint, Sprint takes it to Kansas City to be switched, providing all this equipment information, it's not going to lead to anything that this commission or that Swift-Pell could use to change. I mean, essentially, if Sprint thought there was a more convenient way to hook into their system between Sioux Falls and Brookings, well, then that would be Sprint's. If Sprint doesn't raise that or provide that information, then Swift-Pell doesn't have to assume that there's a better connect, and Swift-Pell can bar any testimony that there is a better way to connect to Sprint somewhere closer. So I don't see where it's got any relevance to this proceeding or that's going to lead to anything that's going to be admissible or usable.
Thank you. Ms. Weiss, did you have anything?
Exactly.
Oh, excuse me. Karen. Ms. Kramer. Excuse me. Did you have anything? Okay, thank you.
This is Roland Weiss. Based on Ms. Sussex's statements, I guess it could be possible that some of this information could be used as a defense to some of the claims made by Sprint. And so I would recommend granting the motion. My only other point is could it be narrowed just to the Swift-Pell area as opposed to, I think it goes, Mr. Weiser mentioned it goes beyond that.
I think that's a good point. Thank you for adding that. Commissioners, I have a tendency to believe that it is too broad, and would look to any discussion from you folks. Any thoughts?
I agree with those thoughts. I don't think that we need to, you know, have everything in under God's green earth given to them. I think narrowing it down to the Swift-Pell area would be appropriate.
Excuse me. Commissioner, I didn't hear your last statement.
I think that narrowing it down to the Swift-Pell area would be appropriate.
Is that a motion?
Yes.
Discussion on the motion to grant interrogatories 555, 56, 57, but narrow it to the Swifttail area.
Yes.
Commissioner Johnson.
Aye.
Commissioner Colbeck.
Aye.
Hanson votes yes. Motion carries. Interrogatory 11.
Thank you. Interrogatory 11, we asked for information concerning the volume of traffic sent to Swifttail for termination for various time periods, and we asked for different types of traffic. I would note that there was a similar question posed to Alltel. However, there's a difference between Sprint and Alltel. Alltel is a wireless carrier, and therefore some of the categories in interrogatory 11 that are here were not part of the Alltel request just because they apply to wireline traffic and not wireless traffic. In the Alltel request, we had a lot of debate about traffic that went through the Quest tandem, and it was ultimately, the commission ultimately ordered Alltel to provide information about traffic through the Quest tandem. And the same argument applies to the Sprint traffic, and that is Sprint and Alltel are arguing that indirect interconnections, in fact, Mr. Wieczorek just referred to it in his last argument, that indirect interconnections are just as efficient as direct connections, and that Swifttail has incorrectly modeled the cost of transport by using direct connections. And Sprint has also acknowledged that it uses, that it sends traffic to Swifttail through indirect connections and through the Quest tandem. And we believe that is both wireline and wireless traffic. And what we do know is that there's a lot of traffic that terminates to Swifttail that is phantom traffic. It comes from the Quest tandem. We don't know who is originating it. We're not able to bill reciprocomp for it. Quest refuses to pay for it and claims it's not their traffic, but we don't know whose traffic it is. So there's definitely a question that's been raised by Sprint and by Alltel concerning whether or not direct connects and indirect connects are, or indirects are just as efficient as directs. And it is the provision of this kind of information about volumes of traffic that will go to proving or disproving that assertion. I would also say that Sprint challenges the number of trunks that Swifttail has estimated will be needed for traffic between Sprint and Swifttail. And therefore, the amount of traffic that Sprint sends to Swifttail, just like the amount of traffic that Swifttail may send to Sprint, it is that total amount of traffic that will determine how many trunks are, in fact, necessary. And so if we can get an idea of how much traffic Sprint, in fact, already sends, that will give us the ability to take a look at the number of trunks that we have modeled and whether or not that's an accurate picture.
Mr. Wieczorek?
Well, I guess I stand by the objection, and I know that the commission ordered some of this, and just so you know, I did talk to my Sprint contacts, and they said that they only keep information on a rolling 12-month, so this goes back to the year 2000. So first of all, just for that date. Now, I do have some confusion, and I believe the argument kind of mixes issues on traffic. The fact that Sprint might be delivering IXC traffic really is not going to have any bearing about on whether what Swifttail traffic might have to provide to a CLEC. So I think the argument's flawed. I have talked to carrier regarding how long they might keep information on billings from the Quest tandem. And from the standpoint of any IXC traffic, Swifttail should be billing this to Sprint anyway, and they should have all that number, all those numbers, because it's billed as access. I don't want to get into a big argument here. I know what the commission ordered last time is that Alltel see what they can get from out of the Quest tandem and provide that. And if that's the commission's desire here, I will certainly pursue it.
Ms. Kramer?
Staff's position would be basically what Mr. Zorich stated at the end. If they can get the information and provide it, they should.
Ms. Weiss?
I guess I'm somewhat confused. I think in the Altal one, I thought it was Ms. Sisak that narrowed it to the Quest 10. But you're not in this case, is that correct? Or did I get that wrong?
No, that is correct. And I think that's because, number one, the categories of traffic being sought in the original request are different. Although wireless carrier, you know, the designation of local traffic, toll traffic, is different for wireline carriers versus wireless carriers. Just the kind of the whole way that traffic is categorized by Sprint is different than what applies to Altel, and the types of traffic that Sprint sends to Swiftel are different than what Altel sends. And so that's what the different questions, the different subparts of Interrogatory 11 reflect that.
I would recommend granting it, but to the extent that Sprint has that information. I think there's an issue about they only keep 12-month rolling numbers or something.
Yeah, and just so that's their standard policy, they told me, so the only thing they're going to be able to find is to go back 12 months.
Thank you. Commissioners? I'll move to grant Interrogatory 11 to the extent that the information exists. Any discussion? Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Colbeck?
Nay.
Commissioner Hansen votes yes. Motion carries. Next interrogatory is item number 12.
Yes, thank you. Item number 12, Swiftel requested information about the number of CLEC access lines that Brent has in South Dakota local exchanges. And we ask that it be stated separately as to business and residential and as to local or toll. First of all, let me just explain that one of the reasons why we asked for the separate information as to local versus toll is it is very possible and probably likely, actually, that Sprint has toll customers in Swiftel's service area, but it provides no other service to them. And that type of a customer, frankly, the information that would be associated with that type of a customer is a little bit different than what would be gained from understanding whether Swiftel has Sprint has a customer who is a customer for both local and toll. And again, part of this all of this goes to the claims raised by Swiftel concerning its cost exhibits, and also to refute claims by Sprint and Altel concerning the effect of competition of Swiftel's petition. In their testimony, Sprint's testimony, witness Farrar, I believe that's the correct pronunciation, claims that Swiftel's cost exhibits are grossly overstated because Swiftel has incorrectly assumed the amount of market share it will lose to Sprint. And he then offers a different calculation of the projected market share that Swiftel may lose based on kind of nationwide cable telephone penetration rates. But we have better data than that out there, and that is we have the actual, Sprint should have the actual penetration data of its cable services and, where it does this kind of a partnership with cable companies. And it also is operating in South Dakota. So it has the specific example of what kind of market share numbers are appropriate based on its own experience in South Dakota. And, of course, this actual data is much better than nationwide data, in predicting what might actually happen in the Swiftel service area. So we again, it's an issue that was raised by Sprint. Under the rules of evidence, we discovery is appropriate to relating to any claim or defense raised by any party. This was a claim raised by Sprint, and this information is in Sprint's possession. So we believe that it should be compelled, and we also believe that it will give a more accurate picture of what might really happen in the Swiftel service area rather than relying on nationwide numbers that may have no direct application to the situation at hand.
Thank you, Mr. Wysorek.
Thank you. We provided the number of CLEC lines we have at the end of 2006 and 2007. Now, if I'm to understand Ms. Sisek's argument correctly, it assumes, as I understand her argument, is if we have, she's asking also for, and this is what basically, I guess, apply to every ILEC in the state, if somebody's using our long-distance service, we would have to give those numbers. I don't know why that would have any impact on what the CLEC might do if somebody has a Sprint long distance in Myrtle, South Dakota. So, you know, we've provided those lines for 2006 and 2007 in South Dakota. That would be the local lines that we've taken as a CLEC. And beyond that, I don't believe anything else needs to be produced. Now, it would appear that she's not making the argument on wireless subscribers served, since she didn't argue that, and then she's limiting this to Part 1. So, again, as to the wireless subscribers, I don't know why she would need to know what, if any, penetration Sprint has for its own wireless subscribers in the state of South Dakota.
Thank you. Ms. Kramer?
Staff has no position.
Ms. Wysorek. Ms. Wiest.
I guess I would start with a question, and that would be to Ms. Sisek. Are you still asking for wireless subscribers?
You know, I'm looking at my motion here. I apologize, but I think there was a wireless number furnished. The problem was it did not indicate exchange month or year. So I think what we're seeking with respect to the wireless information that was furnished was to just identify what it applies to, month and year and exchange.
Well, to the extent that they actually have that information, Sprint has that, or keeps it in that manner, I think it should be provided in Interrogatory 12.
And they're asking for 7 years?
I believe that's with respect to the wireless. But she said she had the numbers.
I'm sorry, Ms. Wiest. I'm looking at our responses. And we did not provide wireless. We provided our CLEC lines in response to one. And in response to two, actually, all we provided was none. I apologize. I think that answers that. And that's, as you, I'm sure if the Commission's aware, Swiftel operates under the Sprint name in South Dakota, and I don't believe Sprint actually has its own presence in South Dakota.
So it appears that it answered subpart 2, so it looks like it would be back to subpart 1, and they've already stated the number of access lines. You just want it now broken down. Is that correct, Ms. Sisek?
Well, yes, and if I understand, let's take it piece by piece. One is business versus residential, and one is local versus toll. On local versus toll, if I understand what Mr. Wysorek said, all the access lines they provided are local. They did not provide toll only. And if that is in fact true, we will accept that as their answer.
Ms. Rosar?
That's my information, and I will confirm that. And if those numbers contain something besides also contain toll. I will clarify that with Ms. Sisak.
Okay. And then stated, we ask that they be stated separately as to business and residential. And part of that, the reason why is because the usage patterns of business customers versus residential customers are different. The amount of traffic that you can expect associated with a business customer versus a residential customer is different. So if, you know, the vast majority of lines that Sprint normally captures with respect to its CLEC business are business lines, that would result in a different calculation as to how much traffic that might really represent, and it would also result in a different calculation as to, frankly, the revenue loss to Swiftel versus if the vast majority of the lines they capture are residential. And so that's why we requested the breakout between residential and business.
Well, then my recommendation would be that they provide that information to the extent that they have it.
So the only thing that's left is a Sprint providing information to Swiftel on a breakdown between business and residential for how many years?
I believe
just to the extent that...
Right, to the extent they've already provided the other years for the total access lines.
And how many years are being requested? Just... Excuse me, Ms. Reiser.
She's requested back to 2000, Mr. Chairman, but we only have lines going back to 2006.
All right. Thank you. So I would make them. I make the motion that Sprint provide the information to Swiftel for business and residential breakdown for the years 26 and 27. I'm sorry, 2006 and 2007.
Provided they have it, correct?
That's right. Thank you, Commissioner. Any further discussion? Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Kolbeck?
Aye.
Hansen votes aye. Motion carries. Interrogatory 14.
Yes, Commissioner. Swiftel has decided for various reasons, including the fact that Sprint has provided some of the information, not to pursue interrogatory 14, 17, 18, 19, 44 or 45.
Thank you. So we are on interrogatory 63.
Yes. Interrogatory 63, Swiftel has asked Sprint to provide projected revenues for their CLEC operation in Swiftel's service area for 5 years and provide any projected revenue report prepared for your CLEC operation in Swiftel's service area. And the reason for this request closely follows the one that we just argued. The revenues that Sprint anticipates receiving in connection with its CLEC business will, in fact, can be used as really to kind of confirm again what they anticipate is really going to happen in the Swiftel marketplace in terms of the amount of traffic that Swiftel may ultimately have to transport to some point beyond its network, and also in terms of the revenue impact to Swiftel. And, of course, the first point is very much a part of Swiftel's cost-showing about the cost of transport, and the second point is very much a part of Swiftel's showing with respect to burden and also with respect to public interest.
Thank you, Mr. Wazorik.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it's inappropriate, given that these two carriers, I mean, this is all about the CLEC application. I mean, essentially they're trying to figure out our business model and what kind of competition is going to come in and do some of those projections. I mean, we've discussed this in other motions to compel. You know, we're going to give them the numbers that we've got in South Dakota and the other markets. We've given them the national averages as we understand them so they can do some estimations. The fact to go to a competitor and say, hey, give us what you think your revenues are going to be when you compete with us for the next 5 years and your projected net income, which is 66, I think are inappropriate. I don't think they lead to anything in this case. She can look at the historical documents and she can look at the national average and coming up with her studies or her numbers, and I think those are sufficient to the extent that we made any projections as to entering the market. I don't think those are appropriate to provide in this proceeding where the focus is on, the focus rests on Swiftel to prove economic harm. The other thing being, and I don't even know what they might have for any kind of projections, but likely they would include what they would might pick up for IXC traffic. And that would have no bearing on this proceeding as to who the toll carrier is going to be.
Thank you, Ms. Kramer.
Staff would recommend denying that.
Ms. Weiss?
I guess I'm not quite sure how projected revenues would lead to relevant information.
May I respond to Ms. Weiss' comment?
You may.
The information that we sought in the previous question had to do with Sprint's actual experience in other markets. And the information that we're seeking in Interrogatory 63 is what Sprint projects will actually happen in this market, in the Brookings market. So what happened in other South Dakota markets, I think is certainly an indication of what may happen in the city of Brookings. But, the city of Brookings is a unique market, and I suspect that Sprint has studied that. And it might just be that what's going to happen in Swiftel is going to be different than what happened in other markets in South Dakota. And so to the extent that Sprint has any projections of what they think is really going to happen, that would give us an even more accurate picture of what the transport cost really would be to Swiftel and also what the revenue impact really would be to Swiftel of the various proposals raised by Sprint.
Mr. Chairman, the problem you run into is any revenues are going to include long distance and the fact that you're going to be offering a triple play. Take, for instance, the college at SDSU, where most students have gone to just wireless phones but have cable into their dorm rooms. Well, some students may elect to start carrying phone with that cable as a package, but that doesn't have any impact on Swiftel because they're not customers they have at this point. So, I don't see where revenues, net income, can be used as a match. It's what kind of penetration have we gotten? What's the national average make more sense?
Mr. Risla?
Thank you, Chairman. This is Greg Risla, and I wanted to make a comment on this 5-year going out into the future look. It's so dependent on business plans, on pricing, on a whole host of factors. The one thing that we're looking at here, I guess, is a crystal ball that I think it's just got very little value for determining the effect of what I think Swiftel is looking for. Yes, it'd be nice to know what Sprint's plans are, I suppose, but frankly, I don't know who's going to invest in any one of these companies based upon their 5-year plan at this point. I just think that's gone way beyond what they need to receive.
Thank you. Commissioners?
I'll motion to deny interrogatory 63 and 66.
Discussion? Mr. Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Kolbeck?
Aye.
Hanson votes aye. Motion carries. Interrogatory 33 and 34.
Excuse me, just one point of clarification. We were not arguing interrogatory 66, and in fact, Swiftel was not pursuing interrogatory 66. So I regret if there was any inconvenience. I believe Mr. Wysorek brought that into the discussion, but I did not.
Okay. I believe Commissioner Kolbeck has just amended his motion to include 63 and not 66.
I will amend my motion, yes.
And you are not pursuing 66, is that correct?
That is correct.
Thank you. So we are on interrogatory 33. And
correct.
Are you going to vote on the amended motion then?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry.
No, I'll allow the seeing no disagreement from any of the commissioners. It's easy to just simply amend it. Unless you think we should take an official action, we'll I think the commission's position is clear, but on the, I will accept a substitute, excuse me, we've already voted on it, so I can't have a substitute motion.
Well, if it makes it easier, then I'll just withdraw my comments.
Well, I have to do everything right. Well, I'll accept a motion by Commissioner Colbeck to reconsider the vote, to reconsider the motion of 63 and 66, and to amend the motion to read that the commission deny interrogatory 63. Any discussion on that motion? Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Colbeck?
Aye.
Hanson votes yes. Motion carries. We are on interrogatory 33.
Thank you. Again, interrogatory 33, I received an email message from Mr. Wieczorek, and if I understand his message correctly, he states that as to 33, Sprint would concede, like Altel did, that it can occur that people receive wireless numbers rated to areas other than where they live. If I recall correctly, I believe that with respect to interrogatory, the same or the very similar interrogatory which was posed to Altel, the commission did require Altel to respond to the two specific questions that are subparts to interrogatory 33. I make that comment just based on my memory, so it is subject to check. But to the extent that the commission did require a specific response to the two subparts with respect to Altel, we would ask that the same apply to Sprint. In essence, Swiftel agrees to whatever the commission ordered on the Altel question should apply to this question. And if Sprint accepts that, then we don't need to re-argue.
Mr. Wieczorek.
Yeah, I don't have the same memory. As I recall, there was a discussion. The discussion was that statement I made was, look, Altel acknowledges that somebody in Sioux Falls could come in, get a line there, and actually live maybe in Alliance territory but have a P.O. box or something. So in Sioux Falls, so yes, it occurs that people receive numbers rated different than where they live. And I recall that Ms. Sisek said, well, she would accept that statement. And I don't recall the commission ordering anything after that. I did send an email saying, you know, Sprint, same thing can occur, Sprint, and Sprint agrees those same things can occur. And in fact, for 33, it needs to be remembered that this is asking what occurs nationwide for Sprint. Sprint doesn't, as a wireless carrier, truly operate in South Dakota. So I'm not sure as to whether there's any bearing on what's occurring in this proceeding as to what might occur on the East or West Coast. But I gave that same concession when I checked back with Sprint, because that had been acceptable, is my understanding, to Ms. Sisak last week.
According to my notes, I believe we're talking about Altel Interrogatory 19. Is that correct?
I didn't say here. 19 and, yeah, and 19.
For 19, my notes say no motion was necessary to compel.
Right. That's what I recall, because when the concession was granted, there was no motion made after that.
Right. So is any motion required here, Ms. Sisak?
Well, you know, I apologize. I don't have the transcript from the hearing, and I just don't recall, but I guess what I am proposing is that I will check the transcript, and to the extent the discussion basically resulted in the provision of this information, you know, we would accept that, and to the extent that the discussion resulted in that this information not be provided, we would accept that.
Okay. Then I think we can move forward. Is that correct?
Well, I guess the question to Sprint is whether they would accept those. They would agree to abide whatever the discussion in the transcript said.
From last week?
Yes.
Oh, well, as I recall it, I have done that, and so I've agreed to do what Altel did last week.
Okay. So then I think we can move on.
Thank you.
Interrogatory 34. We specifically asked whether Sprint Wireless intends to assign telephone numbers rated to the Brookings Rate Center and populate the LIRG, directing Swiftel's originating calls to the numbers to be routed to Minneapolis. And this in part addresses, frankly, part of Sprint's objection to Interrogatory 33. This is specifically related to the service that Sprint intends to provide in the Swiftel service area. And it, frankly, also, I believe, goes to Sprint's claim that it will not seek transport to any point beyond Sioux Falls. So if that is, in fact, a true statement, I believe the answer to this question should be no, that they won't populate the LIRG to direct calls to be routed to Minneapolis. And I guess I wonder, in light of Sprint's previous statements, why they object to this question.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we object because it doesn't have any bearing on the case. Ms. Sisak's correct. We have stated we're not going to require them to carry traffic beyond Sioux Falls, and as Sprint's not operating in the Brookings territory as a wireless carrier at this point.
Thank you, Ms. Kramer.
Staff would recommend denial.
Ms. Wiest?
I guess I'm just kind of confused by it because, as they said that they don't operate. And so how is that relevant, Ms. Say?
Well, Ms. Weiss, that's an excellent question. We many times asked Sprint why their arbitration included wireless traffic since they do not operate in Swiftel's service area. But Sprint insisted that that wireless traffic be part of the arbitration. I would also note that Sprint does have frequencies, the license to operate in Swiftel's service area. So I can only surmise that although they do not currently operate in Swiftel's service area, they plan to. So I think it's a little disingenuous for Mr. Wieczorek to argue now that they shouldn't have to answer this question because they currently don't operate, but yet in the other proceeding they kept insisting that wireless traffic needed to be part of the interconnection agreement because they had the right to operate.
Well, to the extent this could be relevant to their claim that they won't seek transport beyond Sioux Falls, then I think it could be granted.
Thank you. Commissioners? I will make a motion on item, this is 34. Would you restate that for me again? To the extent,
I think the argument was to the extent that this would support or goes to Sprint's claim that they would not seek transport beyond Sioux Falls, then it could be answered. I'm not sure you actually need that in the motion.
No, I always enjoy it when you say that you're confused when you. It gives me somewhat of a safe harbor when I'm looking at some of these issues as well and trying to figure out what, how do we phrase the,
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Wieczorek?
Perhaps, Sprint has stated in its supplemental responses they're not going to take a position that Swiftel has to carry beyond Sioux Falls, and that would apply to this question also. And as to the the reason wireless minutes are in there is we're talking about, there could be wireless minutes delivered by Sprint from other, from outside the state, potentially over the line. We're not litigating the arbitration here. As far as I know, Sprint is not planning a rollout of wireless in the state in the near future.
So, Ms. Sisak, in light of that, what needs to be compelled?
Well, I believe that what should be compelled is for Sprint to simply answer the question. It's all well and good for Mr. Wieczorek to make representations in this hearing, but we didn't just ask this question whatever, to impose some kind of burden on Sprint. We asked it because, frankly, of contradictory statements that were statements we believe appear to be somewhat contradictory, and we're trying to pin down what the truth is. And it would seem to me that, again, if the answer is that they won't require routing to Minneapolis, then the simple answer to the question is no.
Commissioners, do you see anything that needs to be compelled in item 34?
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I could, I would just have one more question for Ms. Sisak.
Please.
I mean, it seems to me that the, you know, Interrogatory 34 asks if Sprint intends to assign telephone numbers. I mean, I don't know, Ms. Sisak, but I would look at it and I would say that a commitment by Sprint in their filings would carry more weight than what an answer of what they intend to do at this moment in time. Where am I wrong? I mean, certainly intentions, I mean, their answer to Interrogatory 34 doesn't bind them to anything. They may change their intentions down the road.
You're correct, and that also applies, frankly, to their filings. Again, what we are reacting to here is the fact that we already have statements made by Sprint, and frankly, these will be statements that are presented during cross-examination, where Sprint seems to be making statements that contradict each other. And this is a further attempt on our part to pin them down. The one thing about an interrogatory, Commissioner, that is different than their petition, they must support their interrogatory with an affidavit. So that is a sworn statement, whereas the petition that they filed is not a sworn statement and will not be, will basically have no, factual heft until it is admitted at hearing. But a response to this interrogatory will be supported or should be supported by an affidavit, and that will give us a sworn statement by Sprint concerning their intent.
Commissioners, is there a motion on item 34?
Mr. Chairman, I would deny the motion to compel for interrogatory 34.
Discussion? Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Kolbeck?
Nay.
Hanson votes aye. Motion carries. Item interrogatory 35.
Interrogatory 35, we ask a question concerning testimony filed by Mr. Burt, a Sprint witness, where Mr. Burt represents that factors can be applied effectively without disturbing appropriate compensation methods. And what we asked Sprint to do is to provide the evidence, essentially, that would support their claim, and we asked them, you know, to provide interconnection agreements that they have with other rural ILECs, and to state what the factor is, and then to also provide the actual minutes of use that correspond to the factor, and that will allow Swiftel to examine whether Mr. Burt's statement is in fact supported by facts.
Mr. Resort?
Well, as I said in my argument, you know, Mr. Burt states the standard operating procedure used for the great majority of interconnection agreements, and that's factors are used. The interrogatory asked
Mr. Weiser, excuse me, this is Sherry Whitler. I didn't hear the end of your statement there. States that the standard operating procedure used for the great majority of interconnection agreements.
Yeah, and I think I ended it there. The interrogatory would have Sprint review every interconnection agreement it might have with a rural LEC anywhere in the United States for the last 3 years, and then provide supporting documentation, including actual minutes of use that correspond to the traffic factor. I think it's fairly clear that's an overly broad, unduly burdensome request, and has, even if you could argue it has some potential merit in this case, such a broad request is unjustified and inappropriate.
Ms. Kramer?
Staff believes it's overly broad, burdensome, not relevant, and would recommend denial.
Ms. Wiest?
To the extent they are, you know, this would involve hundreds or thousands of interconnection agreements, it does seem overly broad to me.
Commissioners?
Motion to deny interrogatory 35.
Discussion? Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Kolbeck?
Aye.
Hansen votes aye. Motion carries. Interrogatory 42.
Well, yes, I'm actually looking at interrogatory 42. I believe, I'm checking back here on interrogatory 11. I believe that because interrogatory 11 was compelled, that we can not pursue interrogatory 42.
Thank you. Interrogatory, I'm assuming that's all right with Mr. Wiesorek. Interrogatory 43.
Interrogatory 43, yes, we ask Sprint to detail all the efforts it has undertaken, Sprint Wireless, to get IXCs to enter into access agreements. And this interrogatory is directly related to the accuracy of Mr. Burt's testimony at page 23, where he challenges Swiftel's statements regarding wireless carriers and access revenues, and in which Mr. Burt states that Sprint has not been successful in getting IXCs to enter into such agreements. And we are, well, frankly, you know, in part the question basically asks, well, have you even tried? And so we are simply asking Sprint Wireless to provide the support to the statement that they make that they have not been successful in getting IXCs to enter into agreements.
Mr. Wiesorek?
Well, I don't know why it's relevant or likely lead to admissible evidence in this case. Additionally, it's detail all efforts. If the question is simply confirm that you have attempted, I'm sure I can get an answer to that. But to try to run down everybody connected with the wireless arm that may have tried in all 50 states to deal with IXCs, I think is overly broad, unduly burdensome, not relevant to these proceedings, or likely to lead to admissible evidence.
Ms. Kramer.
To the extent that Sprint can confirm that Sprint has attempted, they should do that. Otherwise, it's overly broad, burdensome, and not relevant. And I would deny to that extent, other than, as I said, if Sprint can confirm the mere statement they have attempted.
Ms. Wiest?
I would agree with Ms. Kramer, but also I think it's pretty vague. I don't know what detail all efforts would actually mean.
Commissioners?
What would your suggestion to confirmation be? A letter, a written statement, or just a simple yes and no?
Mr. Wiesorek may want to address what he can provide.
Well, it's an interrogatory, so I would provide a statement subject to the sworn affidavit. The Sprint Wireless has attempted to get IXCs to enter into access agreements and has been unsuccessful to get them to agree to pay access.
Okay. Thank you. Is that your motion?
That is my motion, that in interrogatory 43, that we ask Sprint for confirmation that they have attempted to enter into agreements with IXCs.
Or that their witness overspoke. Ms. Cusack, were you attempting to say something?
Yes, I was. I think if I may, the motion that's proposed would simply ask Sprint to confirm that the vague and unsupported statement made in their testimony is their vague and unsupported statement. And I would make a couple of comments. One is, there's only a handful of nationwide IXCs in the U.S., and Sprint does not have legions and legions of people that deal with that, those handful of IXCs. They have a few, and their sole job in life is to deal with those IXCs. And so for Mr. Wysorek to make the representation that any Sprint employee, you know, whatever, any one of the 56,000 employees that they have might have made a communication to AT&T or to MCI or to Sprint to seek getting access charges is just not an accurate picture of how inter-exchange carriers and local exchange carriers operate. So I don't think this question is as burdensome as Mr. Wysorek is leading people to believe. And I would suggest that it could be narrowed by making it very specific whether, you know, Sprint has made any overtures to the inter-exchange carriers in South Dakota, for example, and if they have, to simply indicate at what level, you know, and the date that that overture was made.
Commissioner Kolbeck, do you have a motion on the table?
I'll continue to have my motion, and I would just venture to say that the chance to narrow the interrogatory is probably come and gone, and now that it's in front of us, I'll just stick with my motion that they can confirm that they made attempts to with IXCs.
Thank you. Any discussion on the motion? Commissioner Johnson.
I'll vote aye.
Commissioner Kolbeck?
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen votes yes. Motion carries. Interrogatory 46.
Just one moment, I'm making a note. Interrogatory 46, Sprint has provided an answer, and so we are not pursuing that.
Interrogatory 49.
Interrogatory 49, we have asked Sprint to identify the contract that is entered into with MCC, and this actually goes back to one of the earlier interrogatories that I believe the Commission has compelled, which 5, 55, 56, and 57, which asks Sprint to identify planned and shared transport facilities, equipment facilities, and other such things with MCC, and the identification of the agreement is the document that Sprint and MCC have represented basically reflects all of their arrangements. And so we have asked them to identify that document.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Wysorek?
Well, this is the contract between MCC and Sprint. This commission's heard a lot about this over the last several months. It's not relevant to these proceedings. If commission wants me to provide what is your network that you work with MCC between Sioux Falls and Swisttel territories, I understand the order's been entered to provide that information. That's sufficient information to provide whether there's a better place for Swisttel to interconnect with Sprint. The contract that contains how they're going to work together is not relevant in these proceedings for any of that information. It's not likely to lead to admissible evidence, and I think it should be denied.
Ms. Kramer.
Staff believes it's not relevant and would deny.
Ms. Weiss?
I think we've already told them to provide the network. I'm not quite sure what more the contract would give to them.
Commissioners?
I move that the commission deny the motion to compel interrogatory 49.
I'm sorry. You made the motion to
deny.
Okay, thank you. Discussion? Commissioner Johnson? Commissioner Kolbeck?
Nay.
Hansen votes yes. Motion carries. Interrogatory 64.
Well, excuse me one moment. Interrogatory 64, I believe Sprint has provided some information, and so we are not pursuing that.
Thank you. Interrogatory 68.
Yeah, interrogatory 68, we ask Brent to, we ask that they identify their CLEC connection to the Medicom network in an attachment 4 that they submitted with their proposal. And again, this is really asking them to explain an attachment that they have submitted, and it also relates to interrogatories 5, 55, 56, and 57, where they were asked to identify various facilities, and this just really clarifies information they've provided.
Mr. Weiserich?
Well, Commissioner, I think the order that you gave me, or that you entered earlier to explain how the network between Swiftel and Sprint, that's probably going to get assumed in identifying the CLEC connection. So I guess I would treat that as part of the earlier motion to compel, is to identify that connection.
If I understand Mr. Weiserich's comment, I think he's saying that Sprint agrees to do this, and that is sufficient for Swiftel.
Thank you. Interrogatory 69.
Interrogatory 69, Sprint has provided an answer, and therefore we will not pursue it.
Thank you. Request for production 1.
Request for production 1, Sprint object. We basically asked them to provide the documents that they relied on to support their answers to interrogatories. And Sprint objected on the basis that they had objected to the interrogatories, and therefore they objected to providing any documents associated with the interrogatories. And through this process, this motion to compel process, and also through the negotiation process that we had earlier with Sprint, Sprint has, in fact, now answered some of the questions that they previously objected to. And so what we are simply requesting is that to the extent they either answered questions or they have been compelled to answer questions, that they provide the documents that they rely on to support those answers.
Mr. Ozark?
To the extent it's necessary to review a specific document, I guess I don't see an objection to that. However, if we've got to look for look to get some data manuals or something like that to determine what exists, some of this might be very, to the extent that we need to rely on a document to provide the information, we'll produce.
And that's sufficient for Swiftel.
Thank you. Request for production 2.
Request for production 2 asked for a copy of the agreement, and in light of the Commission's motion to deny our request that they identify the agreement, I'm assuming that this will be denied as well.
Are you withdrawing, or do you wish us to make the motion?
I think I'd like you to make the motion.
All right. Is there a motion? I will move that request for production 2 be denied. Is there a discussion? Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Kolbeck?
Aye.
Hanson votes yes. Motion carries. Request for production 8.
Request for production 8, Sprint answered. Actually, 8 and 11, Sprint answered, and therefore we're not pursuing.
Request for production 13.
Request for production 13 and 15 are essentially the same as 2, which has been denied, and therefore we are not pursuing.
Request for production 17.
And we are not pursuing request for production 17.
Thank you. We'll turn to Altel's motion to compel that was filed against Swiftel. Interrogatory 3.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Let me pull up that document. We've narrowed interrogatory 3. It's got various capacity Wistel has made a has stated that they're operating at near capacity, so we just want to know is what type of capacity they currently have. That's the as to their transport route. So that's what we're requesting. I think the actual capacity being used is relevant to make a determination of what capacity they have to add.
Thank you, Ms. Sisak.
If I understand Mr. Wisorek's comments, he's further limited this question to asking Swisttel for what capacity they currently have. Is that correct understanding?
Yeah, and I believe that's what we had provided for a limitation in our conference call.
Yes, I will disagree with that representation, but for purposes of this meeting, I would also further point out that we provided information on a number of transmission routes, and some of which, for example, we have said that the intercarrier transport route, that we lease capacity for our intercarrier transport route to SDN, and therefore there is no excess capacity. And that is actually different than the other circumstances that are referred to in our response. With respect to the intercarrier transport routes, Swisttel does not have any facilities. It simply purchases what it uses, and so we believe that our answer with respect to that is complete, and that Sprint's further narrowing of the question does not apply to that at all. However, with respect to the EAS routes, we would agree to provide the current capacity.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, I guess the question would be then is if you could provide what's being leased so we know what they're using, we'd also ask that be provided.
May I respond to Mr. Wisorek's further question?
Please.
Altel's argument as to why Swisttel needed to provide capacity and the whatever amount of excess capacity was to make the argument that if there is excess capacity, it could be used for the traffic that is the subject of this suspension petition, and therefore Swisttel would not need to install new facilities. But when we're talking about a route where Swisttel essentially owns no capacity and simply purchases the amount that it currently uses, then what you're talking about is the potential capacity that some third-party carrier might have, and that's not in Swisttel's possession. That's not information about Swisttel. It's not in Swisttel's possession. So we would object to the implication that somehow Swisttel could provide that information with respect to transport routes to SDN.
Thank you. Ms. Kramer.
To the extent that Altel has narrowed the question and to the extent that Swisttel has the information and is capable of providing it, the staff would recommend granting it.
Ms. Weiss?
I agree with that.
Commissioners?
I move to grant interrogatory 3.
To the extent that the information exists and the degree that Sprint has agreed to provide the information?
That's correct.
Altel has narrowed.
Yes, thank you. Discussion? Commissioner Johnson? Commissioner Kolbeck?
Aye.
Hanson votes yes. Motion carries. Forgive me before we jump to the next one. Sherry, I apologize. You've been going for two hours now. We're off the record. Do you need a moment to rest your rest your hands?
I don't have the paper that has how many we have left. Do we have several left?
We have quite a bit left, yes.
Maybe we want to take 5 or 10.
It's
another item following this also?
We have more to do, yes.
Okay.
So we'll take 5 minutes and give you a chance for your wrists and arms to...
Given the...
It's an odd time to take a break, but I should have taken it about half hour, 40 minutes ago. And if we took it now, do you think take a lunch now and then come back and get an early lunch, or what do you...
Oh, that's what I was originally thinking, but now that I'm thinking, why don't we take a 5-minute break, come back and do an hour and break at 12:30 or something for lunch?
We can do that as well, but how long do we have this phone line?
12:15, and then I can check and see if we can...
Okay, we have the phone line till 12:15, so we're obviously going to have to start up this afternoon. So if we went till 12:15 and then broke at that time, started again at, say, 1:30, that gives us an hour and 15 for getting out of here and back in. Does that work for you, Sherry, or do you have other appointments? Okay. Does that work for the parties that are on the phone?
I'm sorry. Could you just clarify, are we breaking now, or are we breaking...
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We're going to have a 5-minute break right
okay.
now. Then at 12:15, we would break for an hour and 15 minutes, so we'd resume at 1:30.
That's fine with me.
Mr. Wazorik?
That's acceptable.
Anyone else that needs to participate? Okay, we will resume then in 5 minutes. And we are back. Are the parties with us? Ms. Sisak?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Wazorik?
I am, Mr. Chairman.
We are on interrogatory 8A, Altel's motion to compel, filed against Swiftel.
Yes, essentially what this interrogatory boils down to, there's two things. Ms. Sisak has said that they're going to provide the data in electronic format, Excel. I have yet to receive that. So I'd ask that that be provided. Since this response was provided 10 days ago, I believe, I'd ask that be provided before the end of the week. And then there's been the additional the other part of this interrogatory that's not answered is there's no breakout as requested by wireless carriers. What Swiftel has represented, there was a 30-day traffic study. And then in their Exhibit 3 to their petition, they estimate 30 DS1s, which I assume means 29 carriers and then a redundant DS1. Altel believes that this count is highly inaccurate, that there's not that many carriers doing business in this region, and if we get a breakout by individual wireless carrier that they claim they need to have a DS1 for, their 30-day response, their 30-day traffic study will show actually no traffic delivered to that many carriers, or no traffic delivered to some of their carriers, and will actually probably show that counting carriers that are no longer in existence. For example, Altel believes one of the 30 they're counting is Midwest Wireless, which was acquired by Altel more than 2 years ago. And so we believe that the electronic information should be provided and that the information for each wireless carrier broken out in that.
Thank you, Mrs. Heck.
Yes. What Altel requested is that Swiftel provide the actual number of minutes other wireless carriers that are associated with other wireless carriers, which in fact are Altel's competitors. This is information that Swiftel only has. It's not Swiftel information, in essence. It's information they only have because they're the ILEC and traffic flows through them. It is competitive information, however, that, frankly, would provide Altel with information on what its competitors are doing in the area. So in that sense, we believe it's highly competitive information that actually is prejudicial to the other wireless carriers operating and competing against Altel. But I would like to also add that if all Altel is seeking is information or confirmation that all of the carriers listed in the 30-day traffic study are in fact, there is in fact traffic associated with them, we can respond to that question. And that doesn't require a breakout of telling Alltel how much traffic is associated with each carrier. And so if that's all they're seeking, then we can provide that, and it would not result in releasing any competitive information. And I would also note that that was not really the original reason that Alltel gave for needing a breakout of traffic. What Alltel claimed was that they needed the information because we had used separate connections for carriers, and Alltel made the argument that we could combine all the traffic and therefore that would require fewer transport facilities. But again, even for that argument, the only information you need is the total amount of wireless traffic, which we have already provided. So we continue to object to essentially just providing competitive information that it looks like Alltel sees an opportunity to gain some traffic information on what their competitors are doing. The breakout in that form doesn't seem to have any purpose with the argument stated by Alltel as to why they need the data. And again, if what Alltel is really seeking is some kind of confirmation that all of the carriers listed are in fact still in the business of transmitting traffic, then we can provide that information. And it would not release any competitive information.
Thank you. Ms. Kramer.
Maybe Mr. Wazorek could respond to what she has asked. To see if that, is that sufficient for you, Mr. Wazorek?
No. I'll give this commission example. Perhaps it's the easiest way. Let's assume if the breakout, I mean, Verizon and Alltel, let's assume Verizon and Alltel are 93% of the traffic they're delivering. Alltel's already taken the position that, look, you don't have to bring it any further than Sioux Falls. And if the commission gives you a suspension that you don't have to carry it on beyond Sioux Falls, that should remedy it because 93% of the traffic only needs to come to Sioux Falls to these two carriers. So I think that information becomes very relevant as to how much traffic is being delivered. If you have carriers out of Minnesota that are receiving a call every other day, say they're going to dedicate a whole DS1 for that carrier, shows that they are over, that their costs are way too high for that carrier. So I think you need it broken out. And, you know, the way that she could provide that breakout, if she's concerned about us finding something out about a certain wireless carrier, she could just number these 29 wireless carriers they say they deliver traffic to and give us those minutes. And, you know, that's a way to do that. And I think at a minimum, that then protects that and answers her question about protecting these other wireless carriers. And that would give us the ability to argue, say, you've got a couple carriers here that are 93% of it, and that should cover most of your costs. Just if you just limit it, you only had to take that traffic to Sioux Falls.
May I respond?
Go ahead.
I think maybe the cat's already out of the bag. The carriers have already been identified. So if we now number them, how are we concealing the match?
Ms. Kramer.
Staff would recommend Mr. Wazorek's suggestion of the numbering them of 1 through 29. There is a confidentiality agreement, I believe, between these parties that would cover, I believe, anything else. And so I would recommend granting that to the, I think he limited it to earlier, but I don't recall now.
Ms. Weiss?
Yes, I would agree with staff's recommendation.
Could we have that clarified just a little bit better?
I'm sorry.
Ms. Kramer, what's your recommendation is labeling or numbering, assigning a number of 1 through 29.
And then, did you write it down, Ms. Weiss? I think what Mr. Wieczorek still was requesting was the amount of traffic to each of those wireless carriers. Is that correct, Mr. Wieczorek?
Yes.
Minutes of use?
Yes, minutes of use. And if I'm looking at Exhibit 3, and she just grouped, except for what is labeled as Sprint, which I believe is their wireless affiliate, but they grouped all other carriers. So you could just say, here, you don't have to have them in a corresponding alphabetical order of the listing. You could just say, of the 29 carriers, she can jumble them up however she wants, just a listing of carrier 1 is so many minutes, carrier 2 is so many minutes.
Mr. Wieczorek, excuse me, this is Sherry again. She can jumble them up however she wants and then continue there?
Yeah, and then just number them, carrier 1, carrier 2, carrier 3. I don't believe there'd be any way that we could actually draw the lines between the carriers in that situation.
Commissioners? I'm in agreement with staff's recommendation, and so would move that we compel the information. Providing some level of, you know, anonymity might not be the right word, but shield the identity of those carriers with the information provided.
Commissioner Colbert, did you have something? Excuse me. Discussion, Commissioner Johnson.
Aye.
Commissioner Colbert.
Aye.
Hanson votes aye. Motion carries. Interrogatory 12.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not. Here's all I'm asking on these: is it's been represented there's no written agreement, but there's an arrangement made, and that is kind of what I would call they're exchanging traffic without charging each other. If there's under that arrangement, all I'm asking is if there's any other detail, such as if it reaches a certain level, that there's an agreement that they'll approach it some other way. I just want to know if there's any other details on that arrangement, on that agreement of exchanging traffic.
Ms. Sisak?
I think we've already told Alltel that there are no other details, but if they would like me to put that in writing again, I can do that.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, for cutting you. I was just going to say, what she has said, there's no written agreement on this arrangement. But I don't know if that means they have an oral agreement that if they hit a certain level that it's going to be changed, and I just need a clarification that they're just exchanging traffic and there's no triggering points or any other issues hanging out there.
Ms. Sisak?
Again, I believe we've already said that. We've already stated the only terms under which the parties operate, and so I can... again, write that up and say, these are the only terms under which the parties operate. I think it's redundant. But, you know, I can do that.
Regardless of its redundancy, you're willing to comply with that?
Yes, I'm willing to comply with the statement that there are no other terms.
All right. Then is there any necessity of the commission to compel? Mr. Wieczorek?
My understanding is she's stipulating that she's going to check to make sure there's no other oral agreements. They're just exchanging traffic, and I would find that acceptable.
All right. Thank you. Interrogatory 14.
This interrogatory requests a breakout between the CMRS carrier, some of the information on the CMRS carrier, and the landline carrier. It appears from our review that the financials intermingle some of their costs. Now, Swiftel says that they object because they don't have the information in the format requested. Now, some of the questions we got is, you know, are they sharing space and are they utilizing any equipment or power in a shared arrangement? Now, if they are, I'm not asking for a specific format. I'm saying, you know, yeah, are they sharing a building, and is there a cost allocation out between them? I'm not asking that be presented in any specific format. If the answer is we have a building and it's just paid for out of the bookings utility fund without allocation, then that's an acceptable answer. But we just need to know whether there is an allocation, whether they're using the same facilities, and that would help us understand their financials.
Ms. Sisak?
Yes, thank you. First of all, the question asks whether the wireless company is occupying any building space, land, or is utilizing any equipment or power. And then it says identify the affiliate, so it appears to apply not just to Brookings ILEC, but any Brookings entity. The specific resource occupied and or utilized, the amount of costs allocated among the entities, services, or enterprises. This question, first of all, we believe that the only thing relevant to this proceeding is Brookings ILEC, Swisttel ILEC, and that's because it is only the ILEC operation which is allowed to request a suspension of 251 obligations. We also believe that all Brookings affiliates that are not telecommunications-related affiliates, any information about those affiliates clearly has no implication on this proceeding. They're not even related to telecommunications. So when they ask about the wireless operating company using any building, land, equipment, power of any affiliate, what they're asking is not just Brookings Wireless using Brookings ILEC, but Brookings Wireless using any other Brookings entity. So that it seems to me that that part of the question has really nothing to do, is not relevant, is not likely to lead to the production of the admissible evidence for a suspension petition that is related to Brookings ILEC. The other aspects of the question, which are also, I believe, burdensome and overly broad, is when they ask about any equipment or power, well, or land or building space. They're not just asking, does Brookings Wireless use a building that's owned by Brookings ILEC? They're asking, are there any motor vehicles? Is there any photocopy machine? Is there any coffee mug? Are there any paper clips? They say any equipment or power. Is there? Does any wireless? Does the wireless company ever plug in to any power associated with a building or some other Brookings affiliate? When you look at it and you look at its piece parts, it's an extremely broad and cumbersome. We don't, even if you limit it to Brookings ILEC and Brookings Wireless, we have already responded that we don't have the information in the format requested. And beyond that, I believe there's simply no argument that what Brookings Wireless might use of some affiliate other than Brookings ILEC is at all associated with this proceeding.
Ms. Kramer?
Thank you. I guess the question I would have first, Mr. Resort, did you narrow that interrogatory when you were talking to us this morning? Is it or not?
Yeah, I can appreciate, you know, some of the issues that she raised. But here I'm narrowing it to, look, are the ILEC and the landline using the same building, same facilities? Because if you look at the financials they've produced in here, they produce a telephone fund financials, which, in our understanding, includes both carriers. And so, you know, if the ILEC is operating 80% of the building, the wireless 20, then we can go through the financials and go, well, really, you know, how much of this is a wireline cost? How much of this is a wireless cost? If there's a wastewater occupies part of the building, I'm not asking that they break out the wastewater group or anything like that.
Staff's recommendation would be, to the extent that Altel has narrowed their request, I would grant that.
Ms. Wiest?
I would agree. It appears that they have narrowed their request by quite a bit.
Commissioners? Excuse me.
And could either Mr. Wazorek or staff remind me how specifically was that narrowed with regard to when we get a trigger on equipment or things like that?
Well, I guess I would narrow it as, if the ILEC and the CMRS carrier are sharing some facility, identifying it, and if they don't know what percentage, I can understand that if they've not broken that out. But if they're sharing staff, if they're sharing building space, if they're sharing these things, because of the way they keep their financials, we should at least know what they're sharing. And if they know, if they have a breakout, we should receive that.
So is it limited to building space and facilities, I mean, and staff?
Yeah, and equipment.
See, and I guess that's my question. It doesn't seem like we've got much of a, we haven't limited, you know, equipment very much. And maybe not at all. I guess you said if they know what the breakdown is. Mr. Zurich, is there another way? I mean, can we say if the equipment's worth more than $5,000 or something, or?
Or can you narrow it to telecommunications equipment?
Yeah, that's what exactly. Telecommunications equipment. I'm not looking for, beyond that.
Thank you. Anything further?
What about the format part of that? What format do they, Ms. Swiftfield referring to?
If that's directed at me, Commissioner, what I'm saying is, look, they should know, okay, we share this building space, we share these employees, and we're sharing this equipment. If they don't have it, I'm broken out as this much is allocated towards CMRS. If they just got, okay, we just pay X for the building out of the telephone fund, and we've never bothered to break that out, then that's I'm not asking her to go create that.
May I respond?
Please.
The question, as narrowed as I understand it, is to provide information on shared building space, staff, and telecommunications equipment. I believe all that information has been provided to the extent that Swiftel has it. When we responded that, for example, we provided information about employees whose time is billed to both Swiftel ILEC and Swiftel Wireless, we provided information that says the two entities have separate switches and separate transport facilities. We provided information that the two entities do, in fact, share some building space. We also provided information about what the total dollar amounts are, but as to further breakouts, we provided the answer that we don't have further breakouts. So we believe we've already answered the question as rephrased by Mr. Wieczorek.
Mr. Wieczorek?
Well, I tell you what, and I don't want to burden the commission with this. If she'll send me an email pointing me to where that type of information is available, and a representation that that's as far as it goes and there's nothing else beyond that, I would find that acceptable. I don't recall seeing that kind of information, and it could be maybe it's spread over half a dozen interrogatories, so it just didn't sink home.
Ms. Sissek?
Yeah, I would agree to do that.
Great. We will move on then to interrogatory 20, with that understanding. Mr. Wieczorek?
Yes, Commissioner. I was looking for my notes. I believe I sent a letter to the commission yesterday saying that we are not seeking additional information on 20.
Correct.
I would waive any request to additional information on 20. The same was true for 40. Same was true for 41. And that would take us to 42.
Correct.
This 42 has to do with the integrated nature under which they seem to be doing business, and the numbers exist in here. It's interesting that in the responses, in the earlier responses, they talk about its wireless carrier, its wireless switch. And what we're looking for here is, a picture of the customer base so we can then kind of look at how the telephone fund as a whole might be allocated over their actual clientele.
Are you finished?
Yes, I am.
Okay, Ms. Sisak. No, that's fine. It just sounded like you had some more. Ms. Sisak.
Yes, in interrogatory 42, Alltel asked Swisstel to identify the number of customers of the affiliated wireless operation, Swisstel PCS, and also to identify how many of those customers are also a customer of your local exchange carrier operations. And in our response to the motion to compel, we responded that our ILEC operation and wireless operation are separate, that Swisstel ILEC does not know the identities of Swisstel wireless customers, nor does it know whether, who, or how many Swisstel ILEC customers are also Swisstel wireless customers. And so we have answered the question, and there's no further information to provide.
Mr. Wysorek?
Well, there should be an ability to provide the number of customers they have in the Brookings Rate Center.
And I'm sorry, Mr. Wysorek, but we did provide that with part of answers to other interrogatories, specifically the request for information filed with the South Dakota Commission, which includes that information. But I can direct you to that as well.
Mr. Wysorek, you're saying?
Well, yeah. I guess then I'll just ask the commission director to point that to me or provide it if it's not in here, because I don't recall seeing that kind of information.
Ms. Sisak, you stated that you would provide that information to Mr. Wysorek to show him where
yes.
he can find it.
Yes, I would direct him to where we previously answered that question.
All right, great. Do you folks interact in during the process here? And it just seems like a lot of these things along the line as we've been going through that the information's already been received or claim that you know we provided that information, that you could have somewhat of those conversations or without having to have an entire process here before the PUC, but certainly that's what we're here for, if you need us to be here. But as I've said previously, situations where there's interrogatories where we've heard repeatedly today that someone claims they already have the information, if you would facilitate that process just simply by pointing it out where it is rather than saying we've already provided it, and it gets a little frustrating to have the number of people that are involved in an exercise of this nature in order to go through some of those things. Interrogatory 43.
This seeks the amount of traffic exchanged between Swisstel's LEC operation and Swisstel's PCS operation.
Mr. Wysorek, it's Sherry again.
Hi, Sherry.
Between Swisstel's LEC operation and Swisstel's what?
PCS, their wireless operation.
Thank you.
And this is kind of hand in glove with the earlier discussion of knowing what actual traffic is being, what actual traffic's being exchanged and how that's being calculated. So we'd ask that they provide us the information on what they're exchanging with their wireless carrier. That's all I have.
Ms. Sisak?
Yes, I have two responses. The first response is in an earlier interrogatory, the commission directed us to provide in a non-identifiable way the amount of traffic to various wireless carriers. And so information in a non-identifiable way has already been ordered. What Alltel is asking here is they want specific information about a specific competitor that happens to be related to Swisstel ILEC, who is the petitioner in this proceeding. So the non-identifiable information will be provided, and it's not clear why, in this instance, they feel they need specific information about one competitor. On that point, I would also refer to our response They argue that they need the information in general because Swiftel's traffic exchanged with its own wireless affiliate should not be included in Swiftel's claimed transport burden. And we responded to that specific claim by basically saying it's not. We did not include Swiftel's traffic in the traffic burden. They also argue that, and then they continue their argument. The rest of their argument is that the information should be provided in response to Interrogatory 8, and it should be broken out by wireless carrier. And that was the question previously examined by the commission, where the commission ruled that the information should be provided but not broken out by specific wireless carrier, rather in a unidentifiable way. So the second part has already been addressed by a previous interrogatory, and to then further identify a specific competitor, they've demonstrated no need for that.
Mr. Rosario?
As to the burden with, I'm looking at their Exhibit 3 to their petition, and they list Sprint, which my understanding is their ILEC competitor, needing two DS1s and then go through and figure transport costs and monthly recurring, and then break that down to a total cost per access line, and then they break out all other wireless providers. So it appears from at least their petition, they have included that information as a cost burden.
Ms. Desai?
Well, we have specifically responded that we have not. So although it might appear that way to Mr. Wysorek, we have responded that that is not a correct appearance on his part.
Ms. Kramer?
I just have no idea. I'll give it to Ms. Wiest.
I do.
Ms. Wiest, one says it's under the shell, and the other one says it's not.
I think that the information could possibly be relevant. I believe it makes the point, the volume of traffic exchange between affiliated entities in the same market could provide some sort of proxy for originated traffic by Swiftel customers. It might be somewhat attenuated, but I can't say for sure that it is.
Commissioners? I'm not certain what to do with this one. Mr. Kolbeck? As you're just leaning towards the microphone, I thought you might know.
I'm just mumbling to myself, mostly.
Also, maybe to the extent that they're actually trying to figure out or confirm a claim made by Swiftel, it could be relevant to that claim as to whether the traffic was included or not.
Well, I will give each of the parties one last shot at it because we're having a bit of a challenge with this one. Ms. Sisak and then Mr. Wysorek.
Well, if I understand Ms. Wee's comment, I think her comment was if Swiftel included the traffic, it could be relevant. And what Swiftel has said is they did not include the traffic. So I don't know what more we can say.
Mr. Rosario?
And I appreciate the fact she's saying she's not including it, but they've got it on their Exhibit 3 with their petition. So I guess I'm at a loss to either they're changing their position from when they filed their petition as to what their costs are, or it's relevant.
I don't have Exhibit 3 in front of me, and I don't know anyone else here that does. Commissioner Johnson appears to have it, and he's reading it. Mr. Rislov.
I would have a comment. Thank you, Chairman. This is Greg Rislov speaking. Ms. Isaac says the data isn't there. There appears to be some confusion of some sort. I would suggest this, and this happens fairly often, I think when data is presented, that perhaps Swiftel should go about explaining Exhibit 3 in more complete detail. And if that doesn't answer Mr. Wazorik's question, I guess we'll have to take another bite at it. But it seems to me if the claim is made, all the data is there and there's no more to be found, it really does no good to compel further data. So I would just, I would expect maybe Swiftel could give a little better explanation, line by line, column by column, if necessary, of that Exhibit 3 so that perhaps Mr. Wazorik's questions can be answered.
Thank you, Mr. Islev. Mr. Wazorik, would that satisfy the inquiry?
Yeah, I think that might remedy it. I don't know, having not seen it, I'm not sure whether it satisfies it, but I think the explanation of, okay, here's the difference between the two DS1s versus the all wireless providers, if that's their carrier, and if that's why it was part of their Exhibit 3, they are now not including that, and that explanation, I think that might satisfy this.
Ms. Sisak?
If I understand the proposal, it is that Swiftel should explain in detail its Exhibit 3 in its petition?
That's what's festering here, although there may be some items on there that...
Mr. Chairman, if I could, I would think would be to explain Exhibit 3, where these breakouts come from, because there is a total cost per line breakout for Sprint, which we understand to be their wireless affiliate. And if that has not been used then in the actual testimony or not being claimed as part of the burden, an explanation of that why it was listed here, it's not considered part of the burden. I think that's what I'm looking for.
Thank you. I appreciate that clarification because I'm not comfortable with just all out. As having not seen Exhibit 3 recently, that we just, without seeing it, say that everything has to be disclosed on it and itemized. Ms. Sisak, do you have that exhibit where you could look at that?
I don't have it in front of me right now, but we can certainly explain Exhibit 3 in our petition.
And
where we believe Altel has gone wrong in its interrogatory 43. Which I think addresses Mr. Wazorik's comment that, you know, if they think certain information's there and we say it's not there, you know, explain that.
All right. I'm going to make both of you commissioners when you make motions. So I will move then that on regarding interrogatory 43 that Swiftel provide the additional information to clarify that exhibit that has been requested by Sprint.
Altel.
Excuse me, by Altel. Discussion? Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Colbeck?
Aye.
Hansen votes yes. Motion carries. Interrogatory 44. We are at 12:15. If it's all right with the parties, we'll continue for just a little bit further. We don't have too many left here, but some of them have been agonizingly long, and excuse me. Just one more?
Yep. Well, yeah.
And then we go to
a number of them. Altel has withdrawn
exactly.
The request for action.
Exactly. So I know it's 12:15, but we're going to see if we can't get through the remaining interrogatories at this time. So interrogatory 44.
And that's been waived, Commissioner. The only remaining item would be request for production 14.
Thank you. And so request for production 30 and 33. Altel is no longer requesting action on those items. We are looking at request for production 14. Mr. Wazorik.
And request for production 14 is pretty straightforward. We want any agreements or terms of business arrangements Swiftel has with SDN. They are a part owner of SDN, and any agreements they have for exchange of traffic, revenue generation, rights to pool, SDN revenue attached to Swiftel's burden claim. That's all I'd ask.
Thank you, Mary. Excuse me, Ms. Sisak.
Mary's fine. yes, Swiftel objects to providing information as part of its general objection. What they're really seeking is basically information on Swiftel's investment in SDN. It really has no connection to Swiftel's request for a suspension. And I would also note that Swiftel has already told Alltel, and it's frankly a matter of public record, that it's that it is a part owner. It has a 7.76 ownership interest in SDN. With respect to their specific question about transport, Swiftel has already stated that it does not have any agreements with SDN for transport capacity. And so I think the only thing that's actually left is, well, there's two points. One is they make a very broad request for all documents, no matter how trivial they may be. But yet, when you really get down to what they argue, why they need this, is they claim that there could be an agreement where Swiftel is entitled to some kind of a continuing dividend or some kind of a commitment to traffic and revenue generation or some kind of right to pooled revenue. And number one, I don't know. Even if there is such an agreement, the information that it would produce would say nothing about Swiftel's economic burden, and would add no light as to whether or not Swiftel would have a burden, and would shed no light on whether or not Swiftel's claims that there could be a loss in revenue would be there. If minutes go down, revenue goes down. That's a pretty simple, straightforward equation. Now, to the extent that Alltel is alleging that maybe somehow SDN has guaranteed Swiftel some certain amount of revenue or, well, I guess revenue is what they would be alleging, the answer to that is no, and there is no such document, there is no such guarantee, and, you know, I can provide that as the response to this question. But as the question is written, it's not limited to that, and that it appears to be the only concern or the only issue that Alltel really has, that somehow, even if there's a reduction in SDN revenues and in Swiftel revenues, SDN would provide some guarantee to keep Swiftel whole. And that's the only point that Alltel really raises in its argument. And like I said, we can answer that question. The answer is no. But to the extent that they want any business arrangement, which is what the question requests, that is, number one, not relevant, not likely to lead to admissible evidence, not even argued by Alltel that it's at all relevant, and would be burdensome and would provide information about Swiftel's relationship with a with an entity that's not part of this request in an appropriate way.
Mr. Isaac?
I just stand by the comments already made, Commissioner.
Ms. Kramer?
This is discovery, and staff would recommend granting it.
Ms. Wiest?
I agree.
Commissioners?
I don't know. All agreements with SDN seems a little broad. Mr. Zurich, is there any way that, if I felt that that was too broad, is there any suggestions you could provide me as to how I could narrow that in a way that you get the information you really need without having this be overly burdensome?
Well, because we're talking about agreements, i.e. contractual arrangements or business arrangements. So I'm not asking for every letter or anything that might have went back unless it was set forth, here's our agreement. Any information regarding guarantees on or commitments to traffic or revenue generation, rights to pooled SDN revenue are relevant. Those were specifically discussed. Or, you know, frankly, if there's an arrangement that's okay, if you hit a certain transport rate or transport, here's your cost, that you get a cost break, you know, if those kind of, that kind of agreement exists, I think that's information that we're pursuing.
Well, and I do, I mean, I would have tendency to agree with you. I could understand where that might be of value in preparing your case. I'm not quite sure how to put everything you just said into a motion. I mean, it just seems like I can imagine agreements between SDN and Swiftel which would clearly not have any bearing on the issues.
And may I also, I'm sorry, may I make one other comment?
Sure.
Remember that SDN was put in existence back in 1989, so any business arrangements would require us to basically look at records back to 1989, some of which may have expired, who knows.
I just want what's currently out there. I don't want what's expired by any stretch of the imagination. If you look at our arguments, we discuss specifically agreement to buy, sell, transport capacity, and as that could have an impact on the claims, because Swiftel utilized a proxy NECA rate to derive its transport cost. And then we discussed in the other specific area we have in our motion or agreements that speak to their rights as an owner to continue dividends or commitments to traffic, revenue generation, rights to pooled FDN revenue.
Mr. Wisorek?
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Commitments as traffic, revenue, generation, something.
Revenue generation, rights to pooled SDN revenue, as those could go to burden. SDN has intervened here, and both Swiftel have said they've used that equalized access portion to say, hey, you also harm this equalized access if you don't give this suspension. I kind of need to know what's going on behind that scene if they're going to use that as a sword to say this is one of the reasons to give suspension.
Mr. Chairman, if is discussion appropriate?
Certainly.
I just don't know how to parse this. I mean, I kind of feel like it's getting a little broad, but I don't know how to narrow it so that I'm a little more comfortable with it. With that, you know, I would be fine with the commission approving the motion to compel all the contract, and I'd make a motion for any contracts or business arrangements that are currently in effect.
Motion discussion?
I agree. I think the key word is currently. I know Ms. Sisek brought up something back to 1989, but I like the word currently in effect.
Any further discussion? If not, Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Colbeck?
Aye.
Hanson votes yes. Motion carries. We will be adjourned until approximately 20 minutes to 2. And we will pick up on those items, item 2 and 1. Which have been consolidated at that time.
Excuse me, commissioners, is that, since I'm at a different time zone, is that an hour and a half from now?
We are at 12:25 right now.
Okay.
So in an hour and 10, hour and 15 minutes.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, use the same call-in number?
Yes.
Okay.
Just. All right. Thank you much. Yes, you just call back. Thanks.
Thank you.
We are going to begin with the two items that were consolidated towards the beginning of the agenda, which were moved to the end of the agenda. Those are dockets TC06-178, matter of the application of Sprint Communications Company, LP, for authority to provide local exchange services in certain rural areas served by Brookings Municipal Utilities, doing business as Swiftel Communications. Question is, shall the commission grant the motion to compel? And TC06-188, in the matter of the application by MCC Telephone of the Midwest Incorporated, doing business as Mediacom, for a COA to provide inter-exchange and local exchange services in the Brookings Exchange. And again, the question for the commission is, shall the commission grant the motion to compel? The Mr. Kanicki, are you the first to chat on this, or is...
It's Ms. Sisak's motion, Commissioner.
That's what I was trying to find out, who was the... by Mediacom. Ms. Sisak, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Who else is on the phone with us right now?
Talbot Wysorek, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Wysorek, anyone else? Ms. Sisak, we'll start with you then.
Thank you. The issue really being presented here is whether or not Sprint and Mediacom need to provide additional provisions of the agreement that governs the relationship between Sprint and Mediacom. Sprint and Mediacom have provided an agreement, but they redacted a number of provisions in that agreement. I believe it was last week, immediately before our last motion hearing, that Sprint and Mediacom provided a new version of the agreement where they provided some of the previously redacted information, but not all of it. It was either last week or Monday, I provided additional information. Actually, it might even have been tomorrow. I'm sorry. The time is kind of running together. But in any event, I was asked whether Swiftel still was seeking some of the information that was redacted. I responded that we were, but I further limited the redacted information that we are seeking. And so I just give you that history to show that we did try to make some effort to reduce the issues, and I think we've done that. However, some issues still remain.
Well, we appreciate that very much.
Currently, the items that have been redacted that Swiftel is seeking concern the term and the termination of the agreement, transport for commercial business, and service quality. And also, we seek not all of the information in the agreement identifying new markets or initial markets, but we do seek information as to whether the Brookings market is a new market or initial market. These proceedings are certificate of authority proceedings where Mediacom and Sprint have subjected themselves to the Commission's rules in South Dakota law, seek the benefit of being designated as a carrier entitled to all of the rights of a carrier, but also all of the duties of a carrier. And in South Dakota law and the Commission's rules, the burden is on Mediacom and Sprint to demonstrate by a preponderance of the evidence that they, in fact, meet all of the requirements in South Dakota law and in the Commission's rules. The law and rules also have some guidance to the Commission as to what it should do in terms of looking at an application for a certificate of authority. And the law and rules specify that the Commission should examine all aspects of the nature, quality, timing of service to determine whether a certificate of authority should be granted or whether conditions should be imposed. So, for example, South Dakota Law 49-31-71 states that the Commission may impose terms and conditions consistent with preserving and advancing universal service, protecting public safety and welfare, ensuring continued quality of service, and safeguarding the rights of consumers. If you, look at each one of those categories, it becomes clear that the information that the petitioners need to present and which the Commission needs to consider is extremely broad and goes to all of these various aspects of what service ultimately might be provided by the petitioners. I would also point out that Sprint and Mediacom have both acknowledged on many occasions that neither one of them is able to provide service independent of the other. And in fact, they are dependent upon each other for various services and facilities to meet the requirements of the Commission's rules to demonstrate that they are in fact qualified to receive a certificate of authority. They also have admitted that the agreement, which is the subject of this motion, is the document that governs their relationship. And, in fact, Mediacom argues that the terms of the agreement are central to the business arrangement between Sprint and Mediacom. I would like to now specifically address the information that Swisstel seeks.
This is Roland Weiss. Is this confidential, and was any of the preceding remarks confidential?
I don't think any of the preceding remarks were confidential, but I do believe that any discussion of the agreement, the entire agreement has been marked as confidential by Sprint and Mediacom. So I believe any discussion of the specific provisions of the agreement would be confidential.
And is that what you're going to go into right now?
Yeah.
We will turn off the web. We are back on the web, and we are out of the confidential meeting. We have, at this time, I will, as chairman, defer the two items that are before us. Those dockets being TC06178 and TC06188. And we will request staff to have an in-camera session to discuss some of the issues and make certain that all of the relevant issues that are necessary to come before the commission for making a decision are available to us, and to set a future date for a hearing on those two dockets. So, Commissioner Colbeck.
I just have a question. In that in-camera, is Mr. Kennecke and then the four of us, or is that how that is going to, is that how that would work?
The commissioners would not be a part of that.
Well, we won't be a part of the in-camera. I was thinking that we would.
Oh, excuse me. I was misunderstanding. What is your...
I believe it'd be the commissioners and myself would be part of the in-camera proceeding.
Okay.
If...
With, okay. So it would just be a scheduling between the four of us, and that's all we need to include to get a date to get this done.
Right. We can set the in-camera proceeding, and then the commission can decide if they want to go into the public meeting directly after that. I mean, I don't think there's any real time. I don't know if it matters if we just, if it's, they're back-to-back is my point.
Okay. I was just wondering for... to help with scheduling and when we can get this done as
right.
soon as we can. If we're going to have an in-camera and then 5 days later is when the hearing is going to be, or we could do the in-camera and then head right into this matter again, another hearing. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, either way, I think you could do it.
Okay.
Whatever your preference is.
Okay.
Mr. Kanicki, did you have some?
No.
Okay, thank you. Questions answered? Is there a motion to adjourn?
Motion.
All those in favor, please signify by saying yes. Those opposed?
Yes.
Motion carries. We are adjourned. Yes.